You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 111, and I'm recording on Thursday, October 20th. It's been an insanely busy week. I was going to skip the podcast, but then I felt bad since I only record every other week. So here I am, not the best version of myself, but I'm doing it. I had a little procedure earlier in the week that zonked me out. Everything's fine, and I don't have to go back for 10 more years, if you catch my drift. If you're too young to figure out what I had done, then lucky you. Then I got my COVID vaccine yesterday. I felt totally fine last night, but today every joint in my body aches and I'm very tired. And oh yeah, we're fostering not one, but two dogs, which means we now have three dogs in our house. I posted a photo of them on my Instagram account and they're both available for adoption. One is a four-month-old male black shepherd mix and the other is a female 11-month-old pit bull mix, and she's seriously the sweetest. They're both great dogs, potty trained and crate trained, and they sleep through the night and they're totally bonded. So if you want to take both, that would be ideal. If you're in the Los Angeles area and looking to open your heart to a rescue, let me know and I will get you in touch with the rescue organization. Because of the dogs, I've been working mostly outside so I can give them as much runaround time as possible. But it's been so hot in LA, 87 degrees today. It is too hot and I was not made for this heat with my Montreal jeans. For real next week, I know I keep threatening it, I am switching over my newsletter to Substack. You don't have to have an account to receive Substack newsletters. If you already receive my newsletter, you will now receive it through Substack, so you don't have to do anything on your end. However, in addition, on Substack, I write one bookish article a week. This week, it was about my go-to cookbooks. I've written about books, obviously, book awards, book to TV adaptations. And starting in January, I will offer a paid plan that will include read-alongs and book socials and other bonus content. But you can always get the newsletter and the weekly articles for free. I'll leave a link in the show notes to sign up if you haven't yet. They even offer a great referral program where if you get three friends to sign up, you get a month of paid content. I love Substack and I've so been enjoying discovering other writers' Substacks. I'm still running the All You Have to Do Is Call book giveaway. This is a novel by Carrie Marr, who was the guest on episode 110. It is a timely, dramatic, and inspiring novel based on the true story of the Jane Collective in the 70s and the brave women who fought for our right to choose. The giveaway will close on Thursday, November 2nd, and I will announce a winner on my Instagram giveaway post on November 3rd. This is open to U.S. mailing addresses only. To enter, follow me on Instagram, leave a comment below the All You Have to Do Is Call giveaway post, and sign up for the newsletter now on Substack. You can gain extra entries by sharing the giveaway post in your stories and by tagging your book-loving friends. I'll leave a link in the show notes. I am so excited about this week's guest author recommendation, which comes from Shane Hawk, one of the two editors of the anthology Never Whistle at Night, 26 original short stories of dark fiction by Indigenous writers. There are so many amazing authors in this book, Tommy Orange and Rebecca Roanhorse, to name a few. The collection explores the horrors of colonial violence, generational trauma, and the horrors of everyday life. So let's hear Shane's book recommendation.
Hi, I'm Shane Hawk, and today I'm recommending Green Fuse Burning by Tiffany Morris. It will haunt shelves on October 31st, aka Halloween. In this riveting novella, the horrific splendor of the natural world pulls readers into the emotional labyrinth of the reconnecting Mi'kmaq protagonist. With a style both hauntingly beautiful and viscerally unsettling, Morris joins a burgeoning movement of writers reimagining cosmic horror through a nuanced Indigenous lens, surely making Lovecraft turn in his own grave. This book is a compelling portrait of grief and identity unfurled against a backdrop of ineffable beauty and lurking dread. Tiffany Morris's storytelling thrives in this tension, between the gorgeous and the grotesque, and invites readers on a haunting journey through the tangled veins of human emotion and the dark, enigmatic heart of nature itself.
And that was Green Fuse Burning by Tiffany Morris, out October 31st, and Never Whistle at Night is out now, and I will leave a link to both in the show notes. And now it's time for some bookish news. According to Forbes, Paris booksellers are standing their ground, refusing to vacate their stalls during the upcoming 2024 Olympics. The bouquinistes, or secondhand booksellers, have been a main staple along the Seine for over 400 years. They're being asked to dismantle their long-standing kiosks over security fears. Someone could hide something among the largest open-air book market. But the booksellers don't want to go, and they're fighting City Hall on the issue, stating that they're standing for intellectual freedom. Here's what I didn't know about the stalls. Sellers don't pay any sort of rent on them. Instead, they apply for a 5-year license, and 75% of what they sell has to be books and magazines so that souvenirs don't take over. The poet Louise Gluck has passed away at the age of 80. She was the recipient of the Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, and the Nobel Prize for Literature. Quite the trifecta of awards. She was also the U.S. Poet Laureate from 2003 to 2004. Reading about Gluck made me realize that I definitely don't read enough poetry. According to the AP, a letter from John Steinbeck to his teenage son sold at auction for over $32,000. It's a 2-page handwritten letter written in 1958, and the buyer wishes to remain anonymous, but clearly an avid Steinbeck fan. My favorite part of the letter is that it's signed, "Love, Father." I will leave a link in the show notes if you want to read it in its entirety. And now it's time for the books. So it's just me today. As I said, I wasn't planning on doing this podcast, but at the last minute, I thought, why not? It's a throwback to the early days of my podcast for those of you who have been listening long enough when it was just me. My first pick is Pet by Catherine Chidgey. This came out on August 8th of this year. I got this one at the library. It begins in the current day, and we're reeled back to 1984 when Justine, our protagonist, was just 12 years old. Justine's father runs an antique shop populated by essentially dead people's things. He scours the paper, death announcements, and then estate sales. Justine has a best friend named Amy, and they love to walk Amy's dog along the cliffs, making sure they never get too close to the edge. The book is rife with middle school drama that feels palpable. Her teacher, Mrs. Price, is one of those teachers that makes it very clear who her favorites are. When Justine is selected to be Mrs. Price's latest teacher's pet, Justine thinks this is a huge honor. She's ecstatic from the attention. But the more she gets to know Mrs. Price, the more dangerous it feels to be in her inner circle, and the line of appropriateness and boundaries begin to blur. This book is a slow creep. It has gothic undertones, and even though the protagonist is only 12, it feels very much like it's written for an adult audience. And again, that's Pet by Catherine Chidgey. My next pick is The Art Thief by Michael Finkel. This came out in June of this year. And if you attended my most recent live with Annie Sullivan of So This, you know that I recommended this book there. This is a super slim book about the true story of one of the world's most prolific art thieves, Stefan Breitweiser, who, along with his girlfriend, conducted more than 200 heists over 10 years throughout Europe. These were not the elaborate Ocean's 11 type heists. These were distract the guard and hide things in your coat type operations. Finkel dives into the fascinating psychology behind Breitweiser's heists, and I also learned about a very famous artist who stole a work of art and held onto it for, I think it was 11 months before deciding to return it. And if you want to know who that artist is, you're going to have to read the book. And again, that is The Art Thief by Michael Finkel. Next up is Shark Heart by Emily Haback, and this came out in August of this year. So this was previously recommended by Eva Silverfine, a guest author on episode 106, and Shark Heart is a love story about Ren and Lewis, who are relative newlyweds in their 30s. Lewis starts noticing bizarre symptoms. He has an increased appetite, increased thirst, and increased irritability. He learns that he's suffering from Carcharodon carcharias, a genetic mutation. And if you've seen Jaws a million times, as I have, you know that this means he's turning into a great white shark. This is obviously speculative fiction where the characters live in a reality where these animal mutations are possible. But of course, you have to be able to suspend your disbelief in order to buy into it. If you do, you're in for a beautiful and wild journey. Lewis, a high school drama teacher, is putting on a production of Our Town, and he's not only wrestling with his impending metamorphosis, but he's an aspiring playwright, and some of the chapters are written in the form of a play he's working on, a fictionalization of his life. His transformation has caused the creative breakthrough he's been waiting for. Ren, of course, grapples with the impending transformation of her husband, who she knows she will have to let go. So much more happens in this novel, but to disclose it would spoil the act of discovery. Reading this book feels a lot like being underwater, sometimes disorienting, like you've entered new territory, but also awe-inspiring. There are so many themes explored throughout this novel. Nature, the changes people go through in their relationships and in their own bodies. It's a love story on many different levels, not just Ren and Lewis's. I would also argue that it's about generational trauma and found family. And that is Shark Heart by Emily Haback. And if I had to complain about one thing about this novel, which you know I never complain, and it's a personal preference issue, it was just the font bothered me. I didn't look up what the font was, but it's the one where the uppercase Q's are kind of like fancy and frilly, and I didn't even realize this was a pet peeve of mine until I read this book. Since the play Our Town is so heavily referenced in Shark Heart, I decided to read Our Town, written in 1938 by Thornton Wilder, which is my next pick. I know it's technically not a book, but I read it, so it counts. You know what I like about plays? They're a quick read. I feel like the only person on earth who has never seen this play. But I did a little reading up on it, and it turns out the very first production of Our Town took place in Princeton, New Jersey in 1938. The play takes place over three acts. The first is what I would call the innocent act, and it takes place in a small town called Grover's Corner that's supposed to represent an every small town. The stage manager acts as narrator, speaking directly to the audience about who lives in the town. Paul Newman played him on Broadway at one point. There's the Webbs. Mr. Webb is a publisher and editor of the paper. They're lower middle class. There's a definite focus on how ordinary the town is and the dichotomy between the mundane, everyday experiences we all take for granted, and then these larger milestones, marriage, death, etc. It's antiquated, but it was written in the 1930s, so how could it not be? But it still resonates in terms of exploring how time is really the only commodity we have, or I guess the most valued commodity we have, and how so much of life is out of our control. The town changes over the course of the play, as do the people who populate it. I won't say more about the plot. It's moving. It gets right to the core of what it means to be alive. And Emily's famous monologue really reminded me of Goodnight Moon, which made me laugh at a moment when I don't think I was supposed to be laughing. So now, of course, I want to see it staged. A play can only be so alive on the page, and I think it would just come to life seeing it in a theater. And if you are reading or plan on reading Ann Patchett's new novel, Tom Lake, it also revolves around a production of Our Town. And again, that's Our Town by Thornton Wilder. My last pick is Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukovka. And this was a winner for the New York Times Best Crime Novel of the Year. This was one of those books that got so many rave reviews when it came out, and everyone was reading it and talking about it. I just wanted to wait until some of the hype died down. And I'm glad I did, because I'd forgotten everything I'd read about it and went in blind. The structure of this book centers around Ansel Packer, who is facing the death penalty in 12 hours for killing a multitude of women. The tension is built into the structure of the plot. In between glimpses into Ansel's psyche and time marching towards his inevitable death, the chapters in between are the stories of the women in his life. Not only his victims, but his mother and also a detective who has been on his case for years. It's a novel about incarceration, what makes a serial killer, as well as a heartbreaking portrait of the victims whose lives were interrupted. It's beautifully written, and it was a surprisingly quick read considering the very heavy material. And again, that's Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukovka. That's all for me. I'll be back in 2 weeks with the amazing Edward Carey, who will tell us all about his forthcoming novel, Edith Haller. I am so excited for this conversation. All of the books I've talked about today can be found in the show notes and link up to my Books Are My People bookshop.org shop. Don't forget to enter my All You Have to Do is Call giveaway and come find me on Substack. In the meantime, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.